This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 207.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got a really important interview for you on a topic that will undoubtedly affect you and your business in the coming months and years. So you may or may not be aware that new data protection regulations are coming into force in May 2018. And what it means is that if you currently collect data on your clients or prospective clients, or you plan to in the future, so things like email addresses, postal addresses, then you're going to have to change the way that you do your marketing, or certainly change the way that you handle some of that data. So I've got Katrina Cliff on the show, and she's going to be explaining the things that we need to know as small business owners. And just to say that this affects you if you're planning on collecting data on clients or prospective clients in the UK, regardless of whether you actually live in the UK or not. So I think it's going to be relevant to lots of you. And also, many of the things that we discuss are just good practice when it comes to keeping hold of people's data. And I know a lot of us, we have email addresses, postal addresses, and a lot of it is just good common sense and good ethics when it comes to handling and keeping people's data. But before we get to the main part of the show, just wanted to remind you about my 2018 media diary, which is now on sale. So it's an A4 desk diary that is packed full of awareness days and key dates that you can use for your media planning for the coming year. This year, you'll also get the chance to join my Media Diary Owners Club. So if you need help, not just with coming up with the content ideas, but also accountability and making sure you actually create that content and you publish that content on your blog or vlog if you have one, in your email marketing and your social media updates, and that you're pitching to the press and you're actively doing everything that you can content-wise to promote your business, then you may also want to join my Media Diary Owners Club. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes, and it would be lovely to see you using my diary in the new year and also hopefully work with you in my Media Diary Owners Club. And now on with the main part of the show. Joining me on the show today is Katrina Cliff. So Katrina is the founder of a marketing agency in Huddersfield in Yorkshire. Now, I get pitched a lot by prospective guests for this podcast, but Katrina did something that not many people do at all. She actually pitched something that wasn't about her business and what she does, and she pitched something that is really useful to the audience. She clearly sort of had a look and to see what we'd covered before and spotted something that we do really need to talk about on the podcast. So it's probably not the sexiest subject that we'll ever cover, but it's really, really important. It's on new data protection regulations that are due to come into force in the UK in 2018. So welcome to the show, Katrina.
Hi, Janet.
So might you be able to start off by telling us a little bit about you and what you do?
Yes. So as you mentioned, I run a marketing agency called KC Communications in Huddersfield. And my background is I've always worked in marketing. I left school and ended up working as a business admin apprentice within a marketing agency. And I've just kind of, throughout my career, gone through different roles. I've worked both agency side and client side as a marketing manager for both online retailers and global software companies. But back in 2014, just decided that I wanted to do something for myself. And the plan was I was going to be a freelancer. It was just meant to be me. And things grew very quickly. Within 4 months, I had my first employee on board, and we're now a team of six. And we work with a lot of SMEs, everything from 2 people in a business right up to 30, 40 people with various sort of turnovers in different sectors. So, what I'm talking about today is really crucial for all of those businesses that we work with. And listening to your podcast, I just felt it was something to get the message out to a wider audience. And that's why I pitched this content idea.
Yeah, and it's definitely something that was on my radar. So members of my membership community, the Soulful PR Studio, they've been asking about it. And I'd also seen something about it myself. One quick question I want to ask you, actually, because I'm aware that if you're listening and you're not from the UK, you might well be thinking, oh, this is not for me at all. But I'm guessing, Katrina, that there may be things that we cover which are general data protection sort of good practice, basically.
Yeah, even if you've got listeners that aren't based in the UK, but they are marketing to people within the European Union, they do need to be aware of this. Because they need to make sure that they are protecting that subject's data the way that they would do if they were based in the European Union. So it's just as important for them as it is for people based in the UK as well.
Good. I just wanted to check that we didn't have people switching off and saying, I'm not in the UK, so I'm not going to listen. No, okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, ultimately it is the European Union, but if you're based in the US, if you're based in Australia, and if you are marketing products, services to people in the UK and within the wider European Union, you do need to be aware of this.
So it's called the General Data Protection Regulations. Have I got that right? And it's due to come due to come into force in May 2018. So can you run us through what the GDPR actually is? And henceforth, we'll probably refer to it as the GDPR, won't we? So what actually is it?
So the GDPR is a new piece of a regulation that's coming in, and it's actually one of the biggest changes to data protection in the past 20 years. So this will actually be replacing the 1998 data protection regulation in the UK. And regardless of the fact of Brexit, this will still be going ahead. And the reasons for that is because of this level of security that is going to have to be in place when handling data. We want to make sure that we can still compete within Europe as a continent and wider overseas as well. And there's good reasons that it's actually, you know, coming into effect. And I, as I've done sort of my training on this, so I've done courses with the Chartered Institute of Marketing, it's actually surprised me how people just abuse the data that they've got. And it is really going to affect more the business to consumer sector than the business to business sector.
So when we're talking about data, what sort of thing are we talking about? Are we talking about email addresses? Are we talking about postal addresses? What kind of data are we talking about?
Yeah, so data is, it's basically anything that relates to an identifiable person. If that data got into somebody's, into the wrong person's hand ultimately, if that individual could be identified from the information that's on there, whether that be address, whether it be a national insurance number, bank account information, if you could then pull other information together, which helps you to identify who that person is, then that is the data you need to be really careful with.
Okay, so just to put this into context then, so as we're recording this episode, I've just put my media diaries on sale for 2018. So this is an A4 desk diary. So in this case, often when I'm selling to people online, we take people's email addresses. In this case, we're taking their postal address as well, because we're going to be posting them out to them. So it's this kind of data that we're talking about, which would make somebody identifiable.
Yes. Yeah. So any data that you hold on an individual person, you've got to ensure that you are GDPR compliant when it comes to holding that data and using that data. And as mentioned, it's because people have been abusing the way that data is used. So if you think about the spam emails that we get on a daily basis, the direct mail that we get through the post, the telephone calls, people trying to sell things, it is ultimately to protect the consumers from the scams that are happening, from being pestered, and from their data getting into the wrong hands through, you know, hacks and things like that. So it is really about protecting the consumer. And even as a marketer, even though as a small business owner, this is going to be an absolute headache for me, it's another thing to think about. From a marketing point of view, it is actually about ethics as well. And I think if you approach your marketing ethically, then you pretty much you're winning half the battle with GDPR anyway. But it is around protecting that consumer and making sure that they're being marketed to in the way that we'd want to be marketed to.
Okay, so what does this actually mean for us? So for someone like me, I've got an email list of about 15,000 people. I've got loads. I couldn't actually tell you off the top of my head as to how many postal addresses I've got, but we've got lots because we sell physical products as well. What changes am I going to have to make in my business? So I use Infusionsoft for my email marketing. So anybody's email addresses that we've collected, obviously they have opted in, they've given us their permission to take the address. Obviously, if they're buying a diary, obviously they're willingly handing over their address. But as I understand it, that's not enough. And we now need to take it further. So what exactly do we need to do to ensure that we're compliant?
So there's some sort of basics, you know, that are really easy to put in place. So, you know, when people are signing up to newsletters on the website or signing up for other pieces of information, making sure that there's a double opt-in. So when they sign up, they're then getting that email saying, can you confirm that you've signed up to receive this? because in the eyes of the law, you know, if somebody puts their email address in and then they complain that they're receiving communication from you and you say, well, I've received their email address, that could have been yourself actually putting their email address in there. You can then prove consent by the fact that they have then received a subsequent email to say, can you confirm that you want to sign up to this list? They then say, yes, that is correct. That is proving consent that they have signed up to that. So any sort of newsletter sign-up boxes, make sure you've got double opt-in in place. And if people use MailChimp, that should definitely do it for them. There's other software as well that people use. Again, if you need to speak with them and ask if they can help you get the double opt-in working, it might be a new piece of code needs putting in the back end of your website. Start by doing that now.
Okay, so just to be clear for people who are not sure on what a double opt-in is, so this is where, so we say, for example, you have a pop-up or you have something that collects email addresses on your website, and I would put Janet Murray in, I put my email.
Yeah.
So what could happen in theory is that basically I just put those details in and then you can start sending me emails. That would get me in trouble. What I need to do is then send you a second email that says, okay, so you opted to sign up to my email list or whatever it is, or receive this free PDF or whatever it is. Can you please confirm that you definitely want to be, I'm not suggesting you use those words, that wording, but basically you confirm that you definitely want to be on the list and that you're giving that permission to do that.
Yeah. And with the likes of MailChimp, another email marketing software, that is an automated thing. So it's not something that you're having to do manually either. You just need to make sure that you go in to the back end of MailChimp or whoever else and just make sure that those settings are in place so that that happens when they do put their email address in there.
Okay, so that sounds fairly sort of simple and straightforward.
Yeah.
What are the implications as to what could happen if you don't do this? What could happen to you?
Well, this is why probably a lot of small businesses are kind of ignoring GDPR at the moment, because the sort of fines that are being mooted, you know, around 10 million to 20 million of global turnover. So obviously this is really about hitting the big boys, you know, the Amazons of this world. There's already people started to be fined by the way that they're actually trying to become GDPR compliant. And, you know, what it's important to remember that obviously, I'm never going to be able to pay a 10 million euro fine if I was guilty of not being compliant, but there will be fines that are reasonable for your size of business. So, it's crucial that you don't think it's not important to me. But
so this could be thousands of pounds that you could have
could,
to pay.
It could, yeah. And it could potentially spell the end of somebody's business, which... You know, why is why I pitched for this podcast, because I felt it was just really important.
And you just said there that some big businesses were already being fined for how they're trying to comply. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yes. So there was a car company, the name escapes my mind now, but they, as a way to start becoming compliant, they had a load of data that they didn't know if people had opted in to receive marketing communication. And they had another list of people that were opted in. And then I think as well, people that were opted out, and because they weren't sure with that list where they weren't 100% sure on whether or not they had opted in or opted out, what they did was they sent out an email saying, we'd like to send you email communication. Can you confirm that that's okay? And off the back of that, they actually then got fined quite highly by the ICO, so the Information Commissioner's Office. So you need to actually be careful how you actually go about getting consent in place. And to be honest, if you've got a list that you're not sure about whether you can prove consent for, you need to start working on getting your future signups compliant so that you ultimately don't end up with a list that you can't use.
Okay, so when this comes into force, could somebody theoretically come up from, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago or something and say, I signed, you know, I'm on your email list, but I didn't sign up to it? And could you be sort of fined for something that's happened a few years ago, or does it literally start in May?
Yes, that could happen. So if you've got historic data and you're not using it in the way that you should be, then yes, there is the potential. But I think, you know, off the back of one person, you're not going to get investigated. You're not going to get those fines. But it is really about sort of looking at the data that you hold and thinking about how you use it. So, you know, for people that maybe don't have a CRM system in place and they're just working off Excel documents, then, you know, using MailChimp 1 month and maybe using a different email campaign the next. If people have unsubscribed from MailChimp and then you go think, right, I'm going to use a different email software provider, you're not going to know that people have unsubscribed from that list.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's about being really careful with your data. So, you know, I would recommend if people don't have a CRM system in place that they actually
look. And that's customer relationship management, isn't it? CRM, for those people not familiar. Yeah.
Because that, you know, that will be able to track so much information that if you did get investigated, you could say, right, I've got an evidence trail here of they signed up to receive a newsletter on this date, they opted in to receive all this communication. This is what we've been sending them since. You know, they might have received 6 newsletters in between the time they say that they've opted out, but you've got an evidence trail there where you can back that up should anything happen.
Okay. So just to throw in a question from me, a curious question. So I use Infusionsoft, which is obviously one of the more sophisticated email marketing softwares. So sometimes we get emails from people now, actually, and they'll say, I didn't take me off your list. I didn't sign up for your list. And then we'll go and look and we can go and see. We can see what date they signed up. We can see what they signed up for. And then we can see every email that they've had in between. So we can go back to them and say, well, actually, you did sign up. You signed up to this Facebook advert. You signed up to this cheat sheet. And then we can actually tell them all the things that they've downloaded, which people don't like to hear. But is that kind of data okay? So if somebody was to come and say, you've been sending out these emails, that's kind of data is good and that's sufficient.
We're all the same. You know, there's so many pieces of information, content out there that we're busy, that we want to know something, we quickly sign up for it, but then don't always realize where that information is coming from. So then a few months down the line, we might think, why am I getting this? But if you've got that evidence there of where they've signed up to that information, then you're okay. Ultimately, you know, you just need to make sure on any email communication that you do subsequently send out, that it's clear that they can unsubscribe. So that would just be a link at the bottom of that email.
Yeah. And we have that in every email we have.
And just the other thing to bear in mind when it comes to people having the option to sign up to your email is another thing people are going to have to look at as part of becoming GDPR compliant is looking at what their privacy policies and terms and conditions look like on their website. So say, for example, you've got a pop-up that comes up on your site for somebody to book a demo. If someone puts in their communication details in there, you've got to consider actually what information do you really need to obtain for this demo? Is it just a name, a business name, and an email address? Do you really need the postal address? Do you really need to know what their Twitter details are, their LinkedIn account? So it's about thinking about what the minimum data is you need to do something. Also making it clear that by booking a demo, what that will also mean you will do with their data. So in the terms of conditions, if you are then going to, with that email address, start sending them email campaigns, you need to make it clear in those terms and conditions that is what you plan to do with that data so that they have informed consent before they sign up to book your demo or sign up for your newsletter. They know what they're signing up for. So you've got to be really clear with that. So privacy policies and terms and conditions and tick boxes on the contact forms, etc., are something that we all really need to look at and get in order.
And is this something that our email providers are going to provide for us? Because a lot of this is kind of, you know, automated, or I'm just having my website redone at the moment, and we're using a particular service that kind of creates pop-ups for you and you can customize them or opt-in boxes. Yeah. Are they going to be doing some work on this themselves, or is this up to us to do?
Yeah, so it's a mix really. So for example, I use a CRM system called Zoho, and with that I also use the Zoho campaigns. That's their email campaigns. And from my website, we have a contact form which they have to build the code for that form based on what I want.
Right.
So it's the case of me contacting them and saying, right, this is what I want on my contact form. This is what I want it to do. These are the tick boxes that I need on there. They will generate that piece of code so I can put that on the website. You know, the same thing will probably apply with MailChimp. I don't actively use MailChimp as much as Zoho campaigns, but they will have, you know, probably a step-by-step contact form creation. And, you know, all these companies are aware of GDPR coming and they've all got to become compliant as well. So it's not just about what you do. It's about making sure that the third party software that you use as well is GDPR compliant. So, you know, where are they storing the data? What are they doing with the data that you add on there? So they are all working very hard at the moment. And I do expect sort of over the coming months, we'll start seeing them become more proactive with informing users of how they store that data and what they're doing with it. Just as an example, I use Google Drive. And the other day I got an email from Google about updating all their policies, and it's about all being in line with GDPR. And I had to put myself down as the point of contact for being a data controller. So these bigger companies are now starting to get this in place, and that will help smaller businesses like ours get things in order.
Because I think Infusionsoft, they've been in touch with us actually over the last few weeks and asking us questions. And one question that comes up for me is actually two questions. So first of all, say for example, I've got an opt-in on my website, or I'm doing a webinar or something like that, and I'm doing some Facebook advertising, I'm getting people to sign up. And at the moment, the understanding is if they sign up for a webinar, then they're probably going to hear from you about other things. Do I need to have these regulations or terms and conditions before they agree to, or does it just need to be on my website somewhere, or before they actually hit the yes and say that they agree, it needs to be in between?
It needs to be on there, and you just need to make sure that it's really clear as to how they find it. So when, you know, you can't expect that someone's going to think, oh, well, if I sign up to this webinar, that's it, I'm on the list. People have to start giving informed consent that you can do that with their information. So it's just a case of what you'd have your contact form, well, your sign up form, then you'd have your, you know, your button where you click sign up now. Mm-hmm. Underneath that, you might have, please confirm that you have read my privacy policy, my terms and conditions, and make sure those are hyperlinked. So, you know, or if it's, you know, a small piece, can that come up as a pop-up? Mm-hmm. Make it really easy for people to find, because if it's hidden somewhere in your site, it makes people think that you've got something to hide. So just make sure it's really clear. And another thing, it's going to get quite confusing, because the rules for sort of e-privacy really are different for B2C than they are for B2B. So if you're targeting the business to consumer market, they really do have to show that they've opted in to receive that communication. You can't pre-tick these boxes for them. For example, I purchased some tickets the other day for an event, and it was one of the boxes was, I consent to my data being used to be kept informed of future events. In future, when GDPR comes in, that won't be permitted. I have got to opt in to receive that information moving forward. However, with business to business, it's a little murky there, because it's not seen as sort of an identifiable person. It's a business. So if you're purely selling to businesses, then it could be argued that you can keep that on there, because it's what's classed as legitimate consent. If they're signing up to receive information about your business, they have a business interest in what you have to offer. So this is where it gets a little bit confused. And it is really going to be those in the business to consumer sector that are going to be, you know, they're going to have a closer eye on them, and they're really going to need to get things in order. But similarly, you know, if you're B2B, personally, I think follow the practices that are being enforced for B2C, because it shows that you're ethical about the way that you do your business. And I believe that that's only going to pay off in dividends by behaving in that way.
And we talked, well, right at the beginning, I mentioned that I had lots of postal addresses because I sell physical products. What do you need to be bearing in mind if you hold lots of people's postal addresses and phone numbers? I guess we hold lots of phone numbers.
Yeah, so it's absolutely fine for you to have that sort of information if it's relevant for what you do as a business. So if you are sending things out in the post, then yes. But if you're a business, all you do is, you know, is digital communication, is there a reason that you actually need to have the physical address? So it's just thinking about what you need and what you don't need. But it, again, it's making sure that you've got a CRM system in place, that the CRM provider that you use are GDPR compliant, making sure that you back up your data. But GDPR isn't just affecting marketing, it's affecting many different functions of a business. So everything from cybersecurity, you know, through to HR, the way that you handle employee data. So if you've got people on payroll, that kind of thing, you've got to make sure that you meet GDPR compliance, all those areas. I'm not an expert in all those other areas. And as a business owner myself, it's something that I'm having to learn about. But it is, especially if, you know, you've only got two or three people in your business, it's going to be a big sort of time-consuming project to have to deal with. So I think if people can start now, then they definitely should. But ultimately, if you've got data and it's relevant to what you need it for, that's absolutely fine.
Okay, right. So it's just if I was taking people's postal addresses and I wasn't ever sending anybody anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like if you requested people's date of birth, is there a reason that you would need that person's date of birth other than to just send them a happy birthday email? Mm-hmm. You could argue that actually, no, you don't need that information. So yeah, it's just thinking about what you really need and what you don't need.
How would you get into trouble? So could it be that an individual reports you, or would it need to be a company reporting you? What I'm not 100% clear is, and kind of like, yeah, how do you actually get into trouble for this?
Yeah, well, there's a few different ways. Yes, it could be, you know, I don't think people are ever going to get investigated off the back of one complaint. You know, I think it would have to be this sort of multiple complaints over a certain period of time before a small business did get investigated. But the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office, are going to be out there looking to make an example of a small business to sort of show the importance of this. So, you know, it could be that we hear about the stories of telemarketing companies doing drop calls and, you know, things like, it's going to be things like that that bring this up. But it could also be a breach. So if you got hacked and someone's data got into the wrong hands, that's going to be an example. And that's probably going to be, for a small business, that probably will be what gets somebody fined. And it could even be a case of, let's say you've got some information about a client, you know, that could be quite confidential information. It could be, especially for agencies like myself, if I've got their mailing list on an Excel document and I go to send that on to somebody else and I accidentally type in the wrong email and it goes to the wrong person, I would need to report that to the ICO as a breach, and they would then make the decision as to whether or not I would be fined for that. But that is something that we're going to have to do in future. So making sure that we're sending emails to the right people, making sure that the email software that you're using has got the relevant antivirus protection and encryption on it. So it is going to be an expense as GDPR for small businesses in the future.
So what about insurances then? So one of the things that I've been looking at recently in my business is making sure that I've got insurances against all the things that I need to insure against. So can we take insurance out against this kind of thing? And where do we start to look for this kind of thing?
I do believe that for FSB members, they do have...
That's the Federation of Small Businesses, isn't it? FSB.
I think they offer their members insurance, but that's more for the cybersecurity side.
Right.
So that wouldn't be for, you know, if you sent some information to the wrong person or you got hacked. But there definitely is insurers out there, but you have got to demonstrate that you are compliant. So just as you would if your house got broken into, you would have to evidence that you've got locks on your doors you've got security alarm in, all that kind of stuff, because insurers ultimately don't want to pay out. And if they can find a loophole for not paying out, they will do. So it is a case of just making sure you are compliant. And if you are in the UK, and I would imagine in Europe as well, there's so many people that are getting, you know, that are on top of GDPR. And like where I am in Huddersfield, there's been numerous free seminars recently on GDPR from a HR perspective, from a cyber security perspective, from a legal perspective. So there's lots of things out there, and your chambers of commerce are probably a good place to start in finding those seminars.
Okay, great. Now, one last thing I wanted to ask you, actually, and then if you've got anything else that you think we haven't covered, then do jump in, so one of the things that we're just about to do with my email list, we're just about to do a re-engagement sequence. So we're basically looking at a chunk of my email list that haven't engaged for a while, and we're going to email them and find out if they want to stay on the list. And if they do, great. If they don't, then we'll take them off the list. What are the implications for doing something like that? Because you mentioned a big firm early on that got into trouble. And as you were saying, I was thinking, that sounds like a re-engagement sequence. So can you talk a bit about that?
It could be argued because you're targeting businesses who have previously expressed an interest in what you have to offer. There's sort of different legal reasons around why you could email them. So, you know, you need to think about whether that's lawful. So that would fall, because like I say, you are targeting business to business, that would fall under the area of legitimate interest. Mm-hmm. So these people have previously expressed an interest in what you have to offer. Therefore, yes, you could probably get away with that and argue legitimate interest. What I would think about, though, is if there's people that you don't hear back from, their email addresses bounce, or they opt out, is you get rid of their data on your CRM. That's something that when I was having the discussion with the Chartered Institute of Marketing, there was a discussion around how long you actually keep somebody's data.
Right.
And it's like, well, how long do you actually need to keep that for? You know, if you're an online retailer, let's say, selling fridges, you might keep that person's data for 5-10 years if you kind of think what the buying cycle is for white goods products. But if it's, you know, if it's something that they might only purchase once or twice, do you really need to keep their data on file? And if not, if they've opted out and it, like you say, it's historic data, then I would consider stripping that out of your CRM. Yeah.
So we could do our re-engagement sequence, but if there's people we don't hear back from, or categorically tell us they don't want to hear any more from us, then we just get rid of that data. And yeah, that's certainly
in fact,
what we want to do.
The name of the car company, and it was Honda. If you Google sort of Honda failed marketing engagement exercise, then you will come across that. Just coming back to that data list that you talked about, like I say, there's different rules there because you are targeting businesses. So like I said, that legitimate interest rule applies.
Okay.
If it's an individual, like say if you're a retailer and they've previously ordered from you in the past, you wouldn't be able to do that sort of exercise. That's exactly what Honda did, and that's what they fell foul of, but that's because they were targeting consumers.
Mm. It just made me think of an example, actually. So I have this treatment done on my hair called Yuko. Honestly, there's a point to this. It's a Japanese hair straightening treatment. And I remember I used to go to a salon in Mayfair to have it done. And then one day I got a text from one of the stylists to say, look, I've left the salon. I'm now working at this salon. So if you want to come get your Yuko done here, then here's where I am. So that's fine. I went off and had my hair done with her. Then I got a text from another stylist who'd also been at the salon. And she said, oh, I'm not working at the salon anymore, but you can come to this salon. So actually, I've ended up going up to two different salons. And I finally got the story of what had happened, actually, the last time I went, because I went back to the first stylist, who I prefer anyway. And she said that when this salon was closing down that did this Yuko treatment, she said that basically the owner, it all happened very suddenly. And she just said to these two stylists that you can have the list if you want. And they were like, you know, they just split it. They split it between them. They took the list, they split it between them. And I can't really remember what happened from there. But I'm imagining that that kind of thing would basically, they just got a list of numbers and just sort of texting and emailing or whatever. That kind of thing could probably get you a lot of hot water.
Yeah. So ultimately, when people are signing up for information, and like you said, that could be going into a hairdresser's, it could be buying a sofa, it could be responding to a Facebook ad to sign up to a webinar. You've got to give the data subject, which is the individual, you've got to give them control. So there's four pillars of consent. And if you can evidence that that has been followed through, then that is you being GDPR compliant. So the data subject has to be in control of what they are signing up for. So in your instance, you went to the hairdressers, you had a treatment, you gave them your information. You didn't then expect that that information would then be shared out with other people. So this comes back to sort of the terms and conditions, the privacy policies, making it clear what will be done with that data. So it's going to affect those organisations where they say, we may share your data with carefully selected third parties. They are going to actually have to say who those third parties are. Because, you know, you might be happy to receive some information, but you might not want to receive other information. So, you know, making sure that you're in control, that data subject's in control, making sure that you're transparent, so like I said, about the third parties, that they're able to notify you if they want to be removed. So thinking about the unsubscribes. And then also, can you verify that they've signed up? So like I said, the double opt-ins. And as well, like for the business to business in particular, I've had a few questions about what happens if I meet somebody at a networking event and we exchange business cards, can I add them to my list? And it's been debated that yes, that can happen because it's B2B, you've had a conversation around business, therefore you can demonstrate the legal rule around legitimate interest. So yeah, I actually stopped adding people's business cards onto my CRM for a while until, well, I added them onto the CRM, but I opted them out of my email communication until I was clear what the rules were there. But it's about putting the person that's signing up, that's purchasing from you, in control as to what you are going to do with their data afterwards.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you think is worth saying? I know you said before we got on this call that actually the Information Commissioner's Office, there's still debate around some issues, and we, you know, there's still things that have got to be kind of decided. But is there anything else we haven't covered at this stage which is useful for people to know?
I think the main thing is that this isn't something that's going to go away, you know, regardless of Brexit happening. You know, it's something that the UK feels strongly about. And as I've explained some of the ways that people actually do marketing, I can understand why. So don't think, oh, I can put this off, it's not going to happen, it's not applicable. It is. And, you know, if you're a small business, even though there's 6 people in my business now, a lot of it still falls down to me to focus on this. And I know it is going to take up a lot of my time. So the more you can do sooner, the better, really. But like I say, it's going to cover so many different areas of your business. So the first place to go is the ICO website, which is ico.org. They have consultation documents on GDPR, consent guidance. They've got a checklist where you can actually go on and it asks you questions about what you might do with certain data, how you look after it, whether or not you've started even looking into GDPR. And you sort of answer yes or no, and that will give you a checklist at the end of what you need to do to become GDPR compliant. But as I said, there's a couple of areas where they've not made their full decisions yet. I anticipate that will hopefully be done by January, but regardless, it's not going to go away. So whatever you can start putting into place and start getting your head around it. You know, I'm still getting my head around it from a HR and cybersecurity perspective. So start now, don't leave it until it's April.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you getting in touch to offer to do this in the first place, because as I said to you, I think I replied to you straight away, didn't I? I said, yes, please, please.
I was surprised how quick, actually.
Yeah, no, it was on my mind. I was already aware of it and I was already thinking about trying to find somebody to do it. And what I didn't want to do is I wanted to get somebody who ran, like, just like you, basically, somebody who ran their own business, who could talk about it in terms that we understood, rather than, I didn't want to get kind of somebody to come and talk a load of kind of like legal, you know, legal jargon and stuff at us. So you've done a really good job, I think, of explaining it and putting it into context in a way that we understand. If we want to find out more about you, where's the best place to find you?
Either my business website, which is kccomms.co.uk. We will be putting regular information about GDPR and how it affects the marketing function on over the next few months. There are a couple of things on there already. So that's a great place to start. I'm on LinkedIn as well, which is just Katrina Cliff. And then I'm very active on Twitter as well. But, it's not just business on Twitter for me. It's personal as well. So if you do follow me on Twitter, which again is just at Katrina Cliff, you'll get a mix of business, GDPR and personal. So just be aware of what you're signing up for.
Oh, lovely. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you getting in touch because it's just such an important subject. And I hope if you're listening, you found this useful. I found it. I said to Katrina before we got onto this call, I don't know much about it. I know it's important. So I'm just going to treat this like, you know, as I would if I was writing this up for The Guardian or something like that. I'm just going to ask you all the questions that come to mind. So I hope you found it useful and I've asked the questions that you wanted to ask too. But obviously do follow up with either of us if you've got any further questions. And I'll link to all the things Katrina talked about in the show notes as well. So thank you.
That's fine. And if anyone wants to drop me an email, I'm more than happy to. There's so much to touch upon around GDPR and marketing that we can't go through on this podcast all today. So again, if anyone's got any questions, I'm more than happy for them to get in touch and ask that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not come over and join my Facebook community? I've recently opened a Facebook group that's exclusively for podcast listeners, and you can find it at the Soulful PR Podcast Community. That's the Soulful PR Podcast Community, and I'd love to see you over there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.